This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
Discover more of our shows at soundrebel.co.uk.
Hey, and welcome to Soul Story Club podcast. I'm Liz, an actress, voiceover artist, and farmer.
Hi, I'm Helen, an actress, writer, and self-discovery coach.
Each week, we ask our guests to bring a cuppa of their favourite choice as we delve into their stories of highs and lows that have got them to where they are today.
We really like the idea of having a cuppa because it brings that kind of warm, comfort feeling that you have when you pop round to your friends and have a cuppa and a little bit of a chinwag. This week, we've got an incredible guest. He's a friend of mine and he's Christian Burns. He's been in a band, BB Mac, that have toured the world. He's gone on to do his own solo career with the likes of Tiësto. And then even through the pandemic, he set up his own singer-songwriter academy and released his own number one album. It's been a really brave, open discussion that I think you'll really find useful and inspirational as well. He's been so open about his own, you know, his highs of being in the band and touring, and then the lows of the nerves behind it all and what actually goes on behind closed doors. And I was so blown away with how open and brave he was. And here we go. I hope you enjoy it. So, Christian, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here today.
Oh, I'm so happy you're here. We've talked about it for so long as well, so I'm so glad that it's actually happening right now.
It's actually happening. Here we are.
I'm just smiling the whole time. I feel like this is going to be a really good one.
It's just a nervous smile, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's because he looks so professional, doesn't he? It's like he's got the light. It's a shame you can't see. He's got the professional lights, the mic. He's showing us up.
Can you give us a little tune on that piano?
I can't actually at the minute because it's not plugged in. I've got everything. It's all just a big elaborate prop. Everything
it's just
you
an
see,
ornament.
It's just it's actually made out of clay and it's not real. So yeah, nothing
it's
works.
It's all an illusion, isn't
it's
it?
It's just a big illusion. Yeah.
Anyway, getting down to business, Christian. Have you remembered your cuppa today?
I've got a cuppa. Yeah, I have got a cuppa.
What have you got? Tell us about it.
It's going to be very underwhelming, I'm just saying.
The whole episode or just your cuppa?
Well, possibly the episode. We'll see how it goes.
Right, okay.
But I'm going to start off with something really underwhelming, which is a cup of coffee, which is just, it's gold blend.
Oh, classic.
It's instant classic northern coffee, gold blend.
Straight to the point.
And with no sugar as well, so not even any fun in there.
I've got a question for you though, Christian. Do you put the coffee in, then the milk, then the hot water?
Well, I actually put the coffee in, then the hot water, and then the milk because...
You're doing it wrong.
Well, sometimes you get little bits of coffee that don't dissolve and it sticks to the side and I just don't like that and it ruins my day.
It burns the coffee. You're doing it the wrong way. Change it up, mix the milk in, then cover the hot water in. Perfection. What does your mug say?
It says when God made me, he was just showing off. Now I got to point out, I didn't buy this cup. I didn't specially get that designed myself and write the words and then get it sent off to get made. It was a gift. It was actually from my mother. Believe it or not. So she's very biased.
She loves you.
Yeah, she does. She's one of the ones. Yeah.
It's such a mum cup, that isn't it?
Isn't it?
It is.
You're perfect the way you are, Christian.
But it's just a very normal cup of coffee, which sometimes just does the trick, really.
Yeah.
If I'm feeling posh, what I will do is I'll shake the carton of milk before I put the milk in. It makes it frothy. That's if I'm doing like a posh day. But if
you've
normal
got a guest
work,
round.
Yeah, normal work day, it's stirred, not shaken. Yeah.
I relate to that coffee. I totally relate to it. So well done. Helen's got a proper coffee machine. I'm all about just the instant.
Yeah. I grind my beans, I take my time with it. It's these simple pleasures for me.
I can just picture you in the morning up at 5 a.m. getting fresh beans, hauling a sack into the kitchen. Is that how it, not how it goes down, is it?
Anyway, I feel like I'm coming badly off this, so we're going to move on.
Go on, Helen, hit us with your first question.
So Christian, straight down. This is the proper business now. This is why we've got you here today, isn't it?
Down to the dirt, yes.
So I've known you for probably 15 years now.
It's been a long time, Helen.
Any history there, guys?
Can you cut that bit out, please?
There's always history. Everything's got history.
Note to producer, cut. Anyway, So I can't, right, you hate your listener.
Sorry.
So anyway.
I've made you blush. Sorry, go on.
So you've toured the world, haven't you? With multi-million selling records.
Helen, you're not bigging us up. This is...
Maybe you should introduce him. All right, listen, you've gone from BB Mac, where you've toured the world in a band, a UK band, where you've had top 40 hits in the UK, top 100 hits in the US. And
yes,
then you've
you're
gone...
doing great here, Helen. This is great.
Helen, when I said do your homework, did you do any? Do you want Christian to introduce himself?
I really would.
One of the biggest bands and you're there just struggling.
Struggling. Really struggling. And then, wait, it gets better. You went on to do your own solo career with electronic stuff.
That's the one. Gosh. That's the one it's called, Helen. That's perfect.
This is going to be a long edit.
No, this is great. Carry on, Helen. This is great. It's okay.
With the likes of Tiesto, Armin van Buuren.
Fantastic.
BT. And then, throughout the pandemic, you've come out with a number one album, Love Songs of Suburbia, and your own singer-songwriting academy.
Yeah, I have. Wow. It was lockdown. I was busy bee during lockdown.
You got down to business, didn't you?
I did get down to business. And, you know, I'm talking to you here after doing this for like 25 years. And yeah, I've had just such a varied career from the start to like now, just doing all kinds of different things. But I think that's, you know, variety is the spice of life. So I like to mix things up.
Can you take us back anyway to the beginning and like where it all began, like why it all began? Why singing? And how did you know singing was possible for you? And how did you get into it?
And how did you get into the band? I want to know that.
Yeah, I know. We want to know all the details. Yeah.
All the detail. Well, let's go back to 1974 when my mother was born. No, I'm joking. We're not going to go that far. Yeah, do you know what? I was always obsessed with music when I was a kid. My dad was in a band in the 60s and he opened for the Beatles and played at the Cavern and did all this stuff. And he's still obsessed with music. And, you know, I'll try and keep this the short version. But I just couldn't stop thinking about music, couldn't stop listening to it. And I had a band when I was like 13 and it was just, you know, fun. We were singing old Beatles songs and we had this great name called, we were called No Exit. Amazing name for a band.
So edgy.
It was so edgy. We were really, really out there. So it was amazing. That was an amazing time for me. But it was always like a hobby. And it was, you know, I'd always thought, oh, you know, get a proper job, Christian. You know, you can't do this. This is too much fun. You can't possibly do this. And so when I was about 18, I started to work, get, you know, jobs. So I worked as, you know, office junior and a travel agent. Worked in a big finance company in Manchester and an accounts department for years. I did sales, I sold cars, I sold houses, and did door-to-door sales, did so many things. And it was when I was about 23 or 24, there was an opportunity to go for this band. There were some auditions for this band. It was on Granada Report, which was the TV show.
Oh my God.
Granada Report, back in the day.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I should go for this band. And went through to these auditions. There's thousands of people. Went and ended up getting in this band along with Mark and Steve and two other guys. This was a completely different band. And we were like, yeah, we've made it. We got through to this band on Granada Reports. We're going to be this massive thing now. And you know, I won't go too far into the story about that, but it lasted a few months. We realised the people behind it, let's just say all their ideas were inflated and they had these huge ideas of what was going to happen, but there was no plan, no budget, no nothing. So we were like, oh, well, that was fun. But I think something triggered in my brain there. It was like when you think you can have something, you've got something and someone takes it away. And my brain was set to, no, this is not going to be the end here. So me, Mark and Steve, who, you know, the members of BB Mac, decided, you know, this was a load of crap. We're not going to put up with this. We enjoyed each other's company. And we said, let's just start writing some songs together. So we just started jamming and we locked ourselves in my bedroom. Sounds a bit weird. For a year. we just started singing in harmony together and practicing. We wrote these songs. Cut a long story short, we did everything ourselves without a manager. We went down to London. We started busking outside record companies.
Oh, wow.
We got moved by the police. We got everyone telling us just to get stuffed. And then one record company, actually, this lady, Jill, was coming back from a lunch break and we were outside busking with these black suits on that we'd borrowed from our dads and this silver suitcase full of CDs. And we started busking and she said, hey, guys, that's really good. Do you want to come in and sing for some of the A&R team? We were like, do we? Okay, so we were like in the... So we did that. We sang and they really loved it. And one thing led to another. It was the times before the independent artist, before social media, before the internet, before anything. You know, if you had to have a record deal to be a musician or to, you know, to have a chance at success. So we ended up then with this word got out on the street that these three lads had come down from, you know, up north, just singing guitars and getting moved by the police and blah, blah, blah. And before we knew it, there was a huge bidding war to sign us. And we did a gig in Liverpool, this club called the Lomax Club. I don't know if it's still there now, probably gone. And we invited all the labels and they all came from all over the country. We came and
we went from
these guys busking to having like these, you know, huge labels like at the gig saying they want to sign us and saying, hey, you know, that rejection letter we sent to you, can you rip it up and come in for a meeting? I was like, well, coming from a meeting, but I'm not ripping that letter up, keeping the letter. So, yeah, that was the beginning of that whole thing, really. You know, just young and passionate about music and just took a chance and thought, no, I'm going to follow my dream here. I'm going to do what I love because I love doing it. So love doing music so much. And, you know, we went on to have the huge success. We got signed to Disney in America. We you know, we sold 3 million albums in the first album. We toured with Britney, with NSYNC and... You know, we won awards. It was just incredible to get thrown into it and just to have that success early on. It was amazing. But we worked really hard to get there. But it was a lot of it, honestly, a lot of it was just the sheer mindset the three of us had. We would just practice all day. It wasn't just like luck. We really put the work in and it was because we really wanted it to happen. So that was the start of it all for me.
Obviously in your family as well, with your dad being in music as well, it's like, it's quite nice when somebody else is in the family because it almost feels like it's possible, doesn't it? Because you're like, oh, singing's in the blood or the music's in the blood or something. Did that help?
It did help. And it's, you know, it's always helpful when you've got people supporting you and lifting you up and saying you can do this. And I was very lucky that my mum and dad always supported me through my whole music career, the good times and the bad times, you know? Yeah, that was really helped me. Especially with my mindset to have that support, my mum and dad, and they loved music. You know, they do love music. They're passionate about it and they've always supported me. So I was lucky to have that because I know a lot of people don't, and it makes them scared to follow their dreams. And, you know, it can influence the decisions and things in life. So I was lucky that they were supportive.
How was that then to go from like being relatively unknown to then touring with like NSYNC and Britney? I mean, I can imagine that's like massive arena tours and stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was huge. It was incredible. You know, we went from within a couple of years from just being in the bedroom to the next thing we're on, you know, giant stadium, you know, opening for NSYNC, you know, singing More Than Words by Extreme, and Nuno Bettencourt from Extreme came on stage with and sang it with us, and 60,000 people, and we were it was just incredible. And it was so fast and so fast pacing. You know, we were on a flight every other day, we were doing interviews, we were in Japan, we were everywhere. It was when I look back now, it was so fast and manic that we didn't have time to soak it in and really enjoy it or see it for what it was. We were just in the middle of it, and it was mind-blowing.
Were you ever nervous, as in when you're around those kind of people, you know, like Britney? Obviously, you were the most incredibly talented band. But then when you put with someone like that, did you ever think, oh, my God, we're from the north?
What are we doing?
just Christian from Wigan here. All right, everyone. Yeah,
it's good job you weren't tour manager, Liz.
Yeah, you should be really nervous right now, boys.
You should be really, really nervous.
Do you know, I remember it was really nerve-wracking. I think the most nerve-wracking thing about anything you do, whether it be 10 people or a million people, it's just the first initial shows and the first doing something that's out of your comfort zone was very nerve-wracking. And I remember the first show we did was at a place called Café de Paris in London. And it was a big showcase that the label had signed us. We got our first songs ready. And I remember just having this, it was terrors just before going on stage point where, you know, where your mouth goes dry and your lips just stick to your gums. And I was that, my heart was pounding that much that I could hear my voice when I was singing. It would be like, it was like this quiver, this extra quiver in my vocal, which was not there normally, but it was a nervous quiver. And I could feel it restricting my performance. And I could feel I was performing at that show, but I wasn't doing my best because I was so nervous. But like anything, the more you've been brave and going in those really scary situations, the second show wasn't as scary and the third show wasn't as scary. So we got to the point where we did that many tours and shows that when we got to the point where we were in America, you know, we'd done a good few shows under our belt. We'd done a lot of TVs over in Asia and everything else. So we were kind of ready for it. But when we walked out onto those crowds were just insane, sold out. It's weird. I wasn't really nervous. I get more nervous with smaller crowds than I do big crowds. But it's never felt an energy like it when you're on the stage to 60,000 people and they are singing your song back to you. And it's just an incredible feeling. And it's like something like it just, you're on stage for maybe 40 minutes, but it feels like about 40 seconds. It's just the weirdest, most incredible feeling ever. But I have actually got nervous recently because of COVID and everything else. I've been a hermit, just, you know.
Yeah, we've all got to get used to being back, haven't we?
Yeah.
We've all got to introduce ourselves back into society safely. Yeah. You know, where everyone's a bit awkward. And it's like the same. I've got these shows coming up. I've got shows coming up later this year and I will be a little bit nervous. I'll be a little bit rusty. But that's just being human, and it's part of the what makes you do a good performance. If you weren't nervous, or
you care, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's quite refreshing to hear it, because I mean, I know a lot of people, and me included, it feels like sometimes when you're nervous that you shouldn't be doing it, that you're like, this is not meant for you. And it's like, no, it's just part of it. It's part of the success of it and the doing it.
Absolutely. And, you know, all the good stuff lives outside of your comfort zone, doesn't it? So I always remind myself now, whenever I'm doing something scary or something that feels like a lot, I always just remember that it's something really positive and something that's going to, you know, take me on to better things, and something better will come out of it. So I kind of embrace that bit of fear now. I always feel if I'm not scared about something, I'm not pushing myself to not enough.
How long were you in the band for, Christian? What was the turning point in that?
So we started the band in 96, but we only had the success. It was like 2000, 2001, 2002. We had this huge success. We were touring nonstop. We were doing, I think we did like 180 flights one year. It was like, it was crazy. It was amazing, but it was a lot. And I think, you know, 2003 started to take its toll on all of us physically and mentally, you know, because it was a lot. And we were young as well. So we were obviously going out and burning the candle at both ends, as you do when you get, you know, there was always a party to be invited to. And we were living in Hollywood, and it was just a full on time. And I think after, you know, a few years of doing that, we're human and we can only run at a certain pace and a certain speed for so long before something happens. And the label wanted to push us out and just to be us out all the time. And we wanted to take a break. And things were changing in the music industry as well. It was like I said before, back then, if you wanted to be successful, you had to have a record deal. There was not really, you couldn't self-release your stuff. There was no streaming services, no social media. So we took a break it took us a year and a half to do our second album. And in that time, we lost a little bit of momentum. And, you know, if that happens, then the label see, oh, you know, you've lost a little bit of momentum. And we released the second album, and I think it did like, you know, 400,000 in its first couple of weeks, which is incredible.
Which sounds amazing.
It really is. And it was, it's a success. But in those days, you know, labels were looking to just pump money into these ones that were just going to, no question, grow. And with everything changed musically, the landscape, you know, there's a lot of grunge and a lot of all that rock came back, and there was a backlash against pop music for a little while around that time. So we were finding it harder and harder to kind of work in that environment, and we were just beaten up. So we took some time off, and then we decided to call the band, call it a day and take a break. End of 2003, it was too much and we were exhausted. And I was going through some of my own issues at the time. I started suffering from anxiety and panic attacks and feeling really low. And I could not get my head around it. Do you want me to get my little violin out now?
I know, but it's so, you know, it's, thanks for sharing that.
No, listen, I can talk about this stuff now because I'm at a place of strength now. And I've conquered this this dark moment in my life. But it was, I thought it was going crazy because, you know, on one page I had everything, I had, you know, the money, the success, everything else. But on the other hand, I was waking up and just crying my eyes out. And I was like, even on stage, you know, I started, these panic attacks and anxiety attacks started to get even worse. I would have them on stage. So I'd be singing and I'd be having this massive panic attack. And I was just like, right, try and just ignore it, Christian, carry on. Even doing like TV interviews, I was having, and it was getting worse and worse.
Was that linked to the pressure, Christian? As you get more tired and you said it's taking its toll on you, do you think when you look back that was, and then you start getting the pressure of the record company wanting you to sell more? Where did that come from?
Well, this is the question I asked. This is the huge question I asked myself at the time, because I thought, I shouldn't have this feeling. I should be feeling pretty good right now. So that was what was a big part of what it was making me feel worse, because I couldn't understand. So it wasn't until I went to therapy in the end, I said, right, because I'm just a normal UK guy who's like, oh, I can beat this. I'll just stay in for a couple of weeks. Oh, I'm all right. You know what I mean? And I really didn't ask for help. And I've realized since then, like, the strength, it takes a strong person to really ask for help. And I realized that was one of the most important things I did, because it was getting worse and worse. And it wasn't until I spoke to a therapist and sat down and she explained to me that you've just been through all these huge things and these, you know, highs and number ones and being on the Jay Leno show and being this, you know, superstar in this band and blah, blah, blah. And then it's just a chemical imbalance in your brain. And it's like just really out of sync, and you're not going crazy, and this will fix itself, and we can fix this. And therapy is a big part of the remedy for this. And from that day, I remember I used to have days where I just was just unhappy all day. And if anyone's ever been through any bout of depression, they'll just know there's no escape. You wake up, you're just unhappy all day. And there was this one day when I started to think about that, and after the therapy, I just remember having this, like, this, I think it was like 30 seconds of just feeling normal. I remember I was like, I just felt a bit normal for 30 seconds, and I forgot about everything then. And I just grabbed onto that little crumb of hope, and I just started to amplify it and really manifest it, focus on it, remember it, and thought, if I can do it for 15 seconds, I can do it for 50 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes. And over the next 2 years, that 15 seconds just turned into 24 hours, and to the point, you know, a couple of years later, I was totally free of it, away from it, and able to look back on it without fear, thinking it's going to come back. So, you know, it was a really dark time, but so many positives came out of that for me that have helped me, you know, carry on and do what I do today and keep, you know, moving forward in life. But it's very common. And I've helped a few people by just talking about this to let people know that it is normal, and it's okay to just go and ask someone if you're not feeling right. And the worst thing you can do, honestly, is just to suppress anything and keep it to yourself. So I'm all about talking about stuff like this, because I think it needs to have more awareness. And I think recently there has been more awareness, but there can still be more.
Well, and it's just keeping reminding, you know, this is why we wanted to do the podcast, to share the stories of, like, you're not alone in it, because it can feel, especially that dark feeling, it feels like you're so alone in it and nobody else can understand how you feel. And thanks for sharing that, because I'm sure that's going to help somebody else say, And especially, you know, being a man as well, it's maybe a little bit harder to kind of open up and ask for help. So that's really brave of you, and thanks for sharing.
No, of course. And you're right, it is. There's this stigma, like men think they can't go and ask for help. It's a real strength. So anyone who is suffering, just really go and speak to somebody.
I think I knew you back then, just then. And I think, I, you know, I had no idea that you were going through that. You were always the life and soul of the party and always put on a front and a persona that, you know, you were so happy, and which I'm sure you were. But I know, obviously, we had no idea what was
going
on.
Yeah, well, it was actually after I met you, Helen, I started getting really depressed. No, I'm just kidding.
There's no therapy for that.
Helen, it was before I met you. It was a couple of years before I met you.
Right.
If we met in like 2000.
Yeah, you were part of the healing process.
Christian, were you still working, singing and performing through all that? Or did you have to take a complete step back?
I had to take a complete step out back. I couldn't even go out the house at one point. I was just like a buzzing piece of energy. I had this constant anxious in my chest, and I couldn't speak to people. It was really weird and really awakening for me.
And did you share it with someone before you were then introduced to the therapist, or did you just look straight down the therapist?
No, I spoke to my parents first, and then some of my close friends, and then I started speaking to my tour manager and my manager at the time, who helped put me in touch with a therapist. So, and I found out as well, it's very, very common within showbiz and anyone in the entertainment industry. It's really, really common, because there's a lot of ups and downs in that career, and it's very common. So just talking to somebody alone and feeling that you're not alone, that helped. That was start of the healing process for me, because I did feel like I was alone and I was going batshit crazy.
You know, we can put celebrities and people in the limelight and such pedestals, can't we? And like, behind it all, they're human with feelings and flaws, and it's not healthy, is it, to project all that onto someone. And you know, even you were talking about you toured with Britney Spears, and look at all we know now that was going on. Like, back then it seemed like she had it all, and but behind it she was just desperate for her own freedom. And it's so important. So it's like, what actually makes us happy, and does fame, limelight, money, success make us happy? You know, and you seem a lot calmer and a lot more content now. Like, what's the difference there? Do you feel like you being able to write your own things now is more freedom for you to express who you are than kind of maybe getting a bit lost in like what you think people expect?
Yeah, I think a big thing is like knowing where your destination is, knowing what you want to do, having a plan, and really being yourself and doing what you love. And being true to yourself, especially if you're an artist creating music, creating paintings, creating, you know, an actor, whatever. It's like you can most content and you do your best work, I feel, when you have got confidence in your own ability and your own work. And I think it's you know, a big problem. It's not a huge problem, but it's something that my students who I teach, they have this fear of being judged and this fear that stops them from ever finishing songs, even, because it's never perfect and they're always looking for things to be perfect because they're scared to put it out because people might think it's not very good. And I think it's when you can get rid of that fear and just be really confident and have a direction in what you want to do and believe in yourself, it's really life-changing as far as helping you to really feel grounded and in control.
Yeah, that performance world, you absolutely have to believe in yourself, because there'll be so many opinions. You will never have the entire world enjoying what you put out there. So you've just got to know that you enjoy it and you believe in yourself. And then once you put it out there, you own it.
Exactly, because you can't, I mean, you know, if you're trying to write a song or do a performance that somebody is going to like, you're trying to write a song, I want to write a song for these people to like, you can't possibly go inside their brains and know what they're going to like. So you've got to go with what you like and know that if you do something that you like, other people will like it. Like you say, you know, not everyone's going to like what you do, but that's okay. If we all like the same stuff, the world would be a really boring place. So I think you've just got to focus on what do you like. And then you're not going to be just abusing yourself and beating yourself up, trying to guess what other people like.
Do you think that's a difference a bit in the band, that with the band it's trying to like reach a wider audience and maybe like losing yourself a little bit? Do you feel like you can kind of have your own niche market now?
Yeah, I just do what I love now. I only work with people I love, and I only write the kind of music I love. And it's the same with a band as well. You can just say, have a clear vision for your band or your project and do what you love as that band as well. Not be trying to do something to please someone else. You just always do it to please yourself, as selfish as that sounds. You're just doing this for yourself, and people, other people with similar taste to you will like it.
Absolutely. And I always think if they don't like it, they just won't tune in.
There you go. It's simple as that.
At least our mums will listen to us or enjoy what we do, because, you know, we know your mum loves you, Christian, with the mug.
She'll be listening to this.
My mum is my biggest fan.
We've always got one fan.
Exactly.
That's it. You just need like just one mum. And that's it. That's all you need. That's it. So you can do anything in your career. Just have one cheerleader there. It's your mum.
One cheerleader, yeah. It doesn't even need to be your mum. Just one cheerleader.
Just one.
And if in doubt, be it yourself.
Exactly, yeah. Where are you at now, Christian? Where is, after all that, how did you then get onto the path of where you're at today?
Well, I did the whole BB Matt thing, and then I took a break, and then, you know, I started to get into electronic music around about 2007. I'd sorted myself out. I'd kind of dusted myself off, got back up, and I'd spent the time when I wasn't releasing and doing stuff. I was actually stuck in a legal battle with the old label who didn't want to let me go and I wanted to go. So I was stuck in limbo for a couple of years, but I spent that time, you know, writing, recording, writing new songs. And I got a message from Tiësto on MySpace, if you can remember MySpace.
On MySpace.
The only friend I had was MySpace Tom. Do you know what I mean?
MySpace Tom.
But I was on MySpace and he sent me this this message, and I was like, who is Tiësto? I've never heard of him, because I think I was wearing eyeliner at the time. I was into rock music and I had a guitar and I was like, and he's like, hey, mate, I really like your song that's on your profile. Can I use it? And I was like, no, that's my song. You can't use it. And about a week later, I got a DVD through the post. It was the owner of his label said, Arnie, who's someone I've worked with now for like nearly 20 years, dearest friend Arnie from Black Hole Records. And he sent me this this DVD of Tiësto in concert. And I stuck it on. I was like, what is this Tiësto guy? He wants my song. Who is he? I put it on and I just saw this DJ in this arena with about 100,000 people, and this arena was floating in the sky with all these neon lights, and he's like, you know, hands in the air, and all these people are worshipping, and there was 100,000 people. I was like, oh, he's a pretty big deal, this guy, isn't he? So I was like, hey, Tiësto, thanks for your message. No, you can't have my song, but why don't we write one together? And he's like, okay, great. So we ended up writing this song called In the Dark. And it went on to be a ridiculous hit for him back in 2007. We had a big hit. It went to number one all over the world. We went on tour together all over the world. And, you know, after that, I did some more songs with Tiësto, some with Armin van Buuren, and toured with him, worked with BT. I've done so many things in the electronic world. It's been just a huge shift from the BB Mac thing, but it's been incredible. And then the pandemic hit. And all my gigs, I had like 40 shows planned. I was like, yeah, it's going to be a great year. I think everyone was like, this is going to be my year. This is my year,
my
this
year.
One.
Yeah.
It's my year. What's that? Why is he wearing a mask? What's that about? And I was like, and then obviously everything just went, you know, tits up. I fled LA because I was in Los Angeles living in LA, and they were all queuing up for guns around the block. I was like, it's time for this English guy to leave LA and go back to home.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I just thought, I didn't want to get locked out of England if my mum and dad got sick and family. So I just thought, I'd come back. And then everything was shut, you know, everything stopped, as we know. So I was like, I couldn't even go and rent a place or anything. And on top of that, I went through a breakup. And I was just like, I found myself staying at my sister's. I know I spoke to you, Helen, a few times. I was staying at my sister's and I made this temporary shed in my sister's garden. She's got this summer hut. So I got all the patio furniture and the cushions because I couldn't even buy any gear because the other studio shops were shut. My studio was stuck in LA, and I built this studio out of cushions and my laptop and some cardboard tubes, and literally fashioned this studio out of all these odd bits and bobs. And then I just thought, right, I'm locked in. I'd already spent the first 2 months of the pandemic just with Domino's on speed dial, drinking a big stack of Stella. And I thought, well, this is not going to end well. I thought, I can't carry on that. So I just decided to start getting fit, and I started getting fit and pick myself up and started to accept that this pandemic wasn't going away. And then I locked myself in this shed and wrote this album and created a whole academy. And the academy is been going incredible. And it's something I did because I was like, what can I do now? I thought, I want to do something. And I want my business to be COVID-proof as well. I didn't want to be like, there's another wave of the pandemic, all my gigs go, I'm like, right, stuck inside. I thought, I want to do something that's A, going to help me, but also help other people. I thought, it sounds like a great idea. So I spent a long time making this academy. And that's what's been keeping me busy recently. You know, the music, I've been releasing the music, it's been going fantastic. But I've been running this academy, and it's been so rewarding for me. And it was something I didn't realize was going to happen. Just getting the feedback of the students and getting to see them, you know, better themselves as musicians and do that journey with them has been incredible. So it's not where I didn't know where I was going to be right now, but now I've got this academy, and I'm out of the shed now. I've got a studio. I've got fancy lights. So I've got a big tin of Nescafe Gold Blend in the kitchen. And yeah, you know, that's where I'm at right now.
You are just making the best out of all your lows, just completely adapting and going with it.
Do you know
it.
What? You've got two choices, haven't you, when you're in like these times, when we have these trying times. You've got two choices. And I just always choose to fight and just grab onto the hope, because I can put my energy into being negative as well. And it sometimes takes more energy to do that than it does to do something good. So I just have to just be disciplined and say, right, no, come on, let's do this. So yeah, you know, it's been a weird few years for everyone. Everyone's had massive challenges. But for me personally, it's been a time where I've just kind of, it's time to grow and time to work on things that I wouldn't have had time to do in the normal life with shows and touring. So,
and I'm sure, like, what a blessing it is for people that they get to learn so much from your experience and your wisdom from you know, so many years in the industry that you can.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I didn't realize how much I would enjoy the teaching. I really love it. And just jumping on with the students every week on Zoom like this, and you know, we tackle obstacles, and I do feedback for them, and it's just really, it's been great. And it was so great during the pandemic to have other people to talk to as well and socialize with and you know, help and talk about music. It was really great because we were all kind of isolated a bit, you know, and I could only talk to myself for a few hours, and then I get bored. Yeah, same old jokes, you know.
Wow, Christian, wow. That is such an inspiring story. Just, who'd have thought that when you were 24, the cycle that you'd have gone
it's
on?
It's crazy.
Yeah. Would you ever imagine that you'd
not
be
at all.
Now?
And it's just a lesson for me. It's like, you never know where this is going to take you, this crazy trip that we're all on. And just be open to everything and just trust the process. Yeah, trust the process.
Hope.
And there is always hope. And I think it's just trying to find hope sometimes in the darkest of times is something I've always tried to do. As hard as it is, you know, there's always something to latch onto. There's always something out there.
Ah, that's so beautiful. Thanks for sharing that, Christian.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
How was that, Christian?
It was fantastic. You guys are just naturals, aren't you? Naturals. You're naturals.
Oh, yeah, stop
no,
it.
Brilliant. You're so good. And I'm so proud of you, Helen, and both you guys are putting this together and actually doing this, because it's one thing to talk about doing something like this, and then sometimes you've just got to do it, haven't you?
This is 3 years in the making.
I know.
So we've definitely taken our time in getting it right.
Listen, but you're doing it. You're doing it right now. And all your vocals sound great, by the way. So,
and I would say, like, Christian, you've always been so encouraging, though. Like, I am a procrastinator and a perfectionist.
100%.
Recovering perfectionist. But I find it so difficult to put stuff out there. And it's now I'm learning, like, you have to be willing to look foolish. You've got to be willing to fail. And also, like, have fun with it. Like, don't take it so seriously. Like, not everybody's going to like it. Just put stuff out there.
Just go with it and learn and get better and refine. And that's the same way I've approached the academy. Just you start something and it's not going to be perfect at first. Then you fix it, then you tweak it and you refine it. But you've just got to start. You've just got to start, because if you're waiting for the perfect time, that will never come. If you're waiting for something to be perfect, it's never going to happen. You know, not, you've got to just, at points, just do things and just take that first step.
It really kills creativity,
yeah, but
doesn't
it? So it's such a great thing to start and then just to keep going on that journey and watch how something develops over time and see how far you've come. You know, just see how far you've come from like 3 years ago to having that idea to sitting here now doing it, and focus on that. No, but focus, like, it's a long time, but at least you're here, you're doing it now, and it's amazing.
We should play you our first podcast, and you will definitely think you guys got better.
Was it a car crash? Was it a car crash?
It was a car crash.
We just didn't know what we were doing, did we? Oh, it was just terrible. It took me 2 years to get the mic out of the box. I just felt like buying a microphone. I'm like, right, I'm nailing this now. I'm like, you've got to get it out of the box, plug it in, learn how to use it. I'm like, oh, too much, I'm out.
No, it does sound great. I've got to compliment you all.
Oh, well, Chrissy, you've been an incredible guest, and thank you so much for sharing your story. And I can imagine that is going to inspire so many people. And that's the whole point of this podcast. We want to hear that the high successes and the lows, and that you can come out of it. You can come out of rock bottom and still be incredibly happy and find something that you never thought you'd, a path that you never thought you'd be on, turns out to be some of the happiest days of your life.
Absolutely. And I think just go with it and be brave, I think, is the big thing. Just to be brave, because you can do anything if you set your mind to it, you know, if it's all about what's up in your noggin, I think.
Can you give us a little bit of a line of a song? Come on, Christine.
Come on.
Is that the only reason
we've got you on?
Just a little line.
Okay, well, you've got to pick a song then. What song do you want?
Hang on, what song should we get him? Do you want one of your own?
She won't know him.
No, but all I can think about is Into the Dark. Or
That's the one. You want a bit of In the Dark.
Because it's hope coming through the other side, isn't
it? Oh, I like that, Helen. I like the link there.
Here we go. I've not sang for about 6 years, guys, so I'm really nervous, okay? And if it's coming for you, then it's coming for me, because I will be there. Because we need each other in the dark. And if it's panicking you, then it's panicking me, because I will be there. So we've got each other in the dark. There you go.
Oh, oh, that was so beautiful.
That was a beautiful moment. Christian, thank you.
Yeah, put me right on the spot there. I've got, you know.
You've got that husk. That's what I love. Yeah, but when you send that over, you can auto-tune all that. Do what you want.
Yeah, you can do it.
You'll get it back. Like, and say, yeah, wow, it sounds just like a record. Oh, he's really good. Wow. I'm going to buy his next album. He's fantastic. And his course. Wow.
I actually bought your course.
You're halfway through it. It's only took you 3 years to get halfway through. By the way, everyone listening, the course is not 3 years long. It's about, Record Ready Vocals is about 4 hours long. So you're doing all right. It took you 3 years to get halfway through.
It is fantastic, though. And I do refer to it all the time. It's just been a very busy year for me.
She's had a farm. She's had farm, kids.
You've been
everything.
Busy on farm.
Christian, where can the listeners find you and also your academy?
You can follow me on all the usual social media. On Instagram, it's ChristianBurns_. Same on Twitter, and I'm on Facebook. And you can go to ChristianBurns.com to find out anything about my music and sign up. Or you can go to RecordReadyAcademy.com for all your musical teaching needs.
Brilliant.
Christian, you're a legend. Thank you so much for talking to us. It's been brilliant.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. It's been incredible. So, yeah, good luck with all the rest of these podcasts. I'm sure they're all going to be amazing. Please send me the first one, the car crash one, so I can have a listen.
Thanks for listening to Soul Story Club. We really hope you enjoyed listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so it will automatically download onto your phone when there's a new episode. Oh, and don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Soul Story Club.